a gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Inside Sources with Boyd Matheson.
Welcome back to Inside Sources. Filling in for Boyd today, this is Scott Simpson. I'm here with Leah Murray from Weber State University. You're also a co-host of KSL at Night.
That's right. I used to.
I'm an alum.
You are an alum.
I think, yeah. I was thrown out.
I don't think that is exactly what happened.
some threat of losing FCC licensure.
You were the Howard Stern of KSL. Is that what you're saying, Scott?
No. No. I deserved that. I shouldn't have opened that can. Listen, election reform. There are a lot of issues around election reform. I came up in the political party space, spent a lot of time around election data, and I'm sort of sensitive to this because I do think that we wrestle about what's right for an election, what processes are appropriate.
Right. And
I'm not sure that we shouldn't be able to think about what's better today
right
than 200 years ago.
I think that's totally right. And one of our county clerks, Ricky Hatch, talks about everyone who loses is always sure the rules weren't right. And I think, to me, because I'm a huge sports fan, it's kind of like when your team loses, it's the refs. Right,
like, oh, sure.
Right? It was bad calls, or if you didn't win in golf, it was the field, right? Like that, it was just a hard course to play. But we've got Ryan Williamson, a governance fellow at the R Street Institute, here to chat with us about reform and how maybe we could do it better. Ryan, welcome to the show.
Hi. Yes, thanks for having me.
So the 118th Congress it begins its work. We've got state legislatures beginning session here, ours as well, here in Utah. I'm just wondering, what's next? What do you see building, both from a national perspective and then maybe, you know, steaming up in jurisdictions around the country?
Yeah, all over the country and even in the federal legislature as well. You know, some legislators are going to think about changing election laws. We saw a lot of changes in the 2020 season as a result of the pandemic. And, you know, some states either, you know, further codifying those changes or walking those changes back in time for 2022. And I think that conversation is going to continue about how should elections be conducted? What's the best way to elect people and cast ballots and everything like that? And so there's going to be a lot of topics on a variety of different issues about elections and election administration.
All right. So what are the genuine issues, right, Ryan? Because I think you're with me that some of this feels political, right? I mean, even though you can't come up with evidence, right, that something bad has happened, people kind of want reform as a result of a feeling that something might have happened. But what are some of the genuine issues that we could and maybe should be debating when it comes to our elections?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I loved your sports analogy. You know, people hate to lose and they'll often look for any explanation that's not they backed the less popular candidate.
Right.
But there are important things that, you know, are genuine, thinking about access to the ballot, thinking about the ease with which everyone who is eligible can participate, and also thinking about making sure everyone's casting a secure ballot, that the process is, you know, rigorous and secure enough so that we can have, you know, faith in the integrity of our elections, that, you know, everyone can cast a ballot and their ballot will be counted fairly.
Ryan, it seems like the Electoral College is where a lot of people like to aim their weaponry as it relates to election reform. As a former,
Ryan Scott has feelings.
I was on scholarship at the Electoral College back. I'm an elector. I was twice elected to serve as an elector for Utah. I've kind of wrestled with that because it does create sort of insulation between actual votes cast in a presidential election and ultimate outcomes. Is there any chance of that changing?
I don't think so. You know, I think about, 2000 and 2016, Democrats were really upset about their candidate winning the popular vote, but losing the Electoral College. But we haven't really seen or heard any movement on, reforms, sincere movement on that since then. And ironically, in 2004, if a few votes in Ohio go differently, Kerry could have won the Electoral College vote while losing the popular vote to Bush. And so it's one of those things that's kind of well institutionalized. It's an easy target when things don't work out. But I don't think we're going to see any real change to it anytime soon.
All right. So I think you helped Scott feel better. Because as a former elector, he's a little, but I'm wondering, you talked about elections being secure. And I agree with you, right? Like, one of the things we should make sure is that when people vote, it's, securely counted and it's part of the system. What possible reforms do you think would make that as good as possible? That sounds right. But what possible reforms around security should we be doing?
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
I mean, one of the main things that we can do, and Congress did some of this in December, They opened up $75 million for security grants to offices, whether that's cybersecurity, whether that's physical security for the election workers who, are regularly under, harassment and attack, some of them even receiving death threats. Like, we need these good public servants who are doing an administrative job, not a political job. We need their experience and their expertise in conducting elections to stick around. And so we need to, keep them safe. We need to provide for kind of new technology. There are many jurisdictions around the country that are using equipment, 5, 10 plus years past their prime. And so, upgrades to hardware, software, everything like that. So just an investment in security, both physical and cyber and technological, I think could go a really long way.
Ryan, we've had here in Utah preferential balloting on some municipal elections in the past. That's kind of an experiment. I think there are folks that would describe that as having gone really well and liked the efficiency of getting to a voter preference quickly. But there are those that say, obviously blaming the refs. They think that the rules skew the outcomes of elections. Do you see that style, preferential balloting, gaining any steam elsewhere in the country?
I think it's entirely possible. The New York mayoral race implemented the preferential style ranking. We saw the Alaska elections, both the Senate race, the House race, as well as the state legislative races employed kind of a rank order system. And, more and more places, I think, in your neighbors to the west in California, more and more local jurisdictions have also adopted some form of kind of ranked choice voting. And so it's something that a lot of places have experimented with, and more places seem to be interested in it. So I do see it, not necessarily going away anytime soon.
I've got one follow-up question in the minute or so that we have left. Ballot harvesting has gotten a lot of negative attention since the 2020 campaign. I was a former executive director of a state political party here in Utah. I call that campaigning, you know, back then. And, you know, this idea of getting people out to vote and facilitating participation and getting as many people elected as you possibly can. Is there any, and frankly, my observation of the pursuit of the banning of so-called ballot harvesting came back to hurt some Republicans, I think, in the midterm elections. Do you see that issue waning or growing?
It's hard to say, but I think you hit the nail on the head. You know, Republicans are going to have a real conversation about how they feel about some of the accessible voting options. I think about what happened in Nevada, where a lot of Republicans decided that they were going to vote in person on Election Day. They weren't going to take advantage of, you know, some of these alternative voting methods. And it cost Republicans some offices because that huge storm came through. People ended up not participating or not getting out in order to do so. And so the Republican Party needs to have a conversation within itself about how it wants to walk the line between security and access.
Ryan Williamson, Governance Fellow at the R Street Institute. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
All right, Scott, coming up after the break, let's have a conversation about Ukraine and the war in Ukraine and maybe how it ties to President Biden's reelection bid.
Two years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.